We are live. Hold on. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, February 1st. And John, it took only 1 year to the day, 1 year for Matthew Stafford to get the Lions stink all the way off him. Are you, I want your raw reaction. Are you happy or are you upset?
Don't care. You know what's so weird about, like, you know how desperate you have to be to, like, latch on to somebody leaving you for better pastures and being like, yeah, they're killing it now. And I was holding them back and happy for them. Like, oh man, that is a bad look.
It's like, I was the anchor dragging them down. How about me?
look at me. And then not just like happy for them, like going out of your way to publicly exclaim how bad you were.
To openly be cheering for that player wearing his jersey from when he played for you, for your team, uh-huh, while he's playing for another team that is not yours. I don't, like, I'm sound like such a jerk, like such a bitter sports fan, but I've said this so many times with, you know, in regards to Michigan State, that I think sports fans need to be pettier. I think you should be petty. Yes. I think the entire purpose of sports is to be petty and to love when your team succeeds, hate when they don't, and hate when anybody else's team succeeds for the most part. Like, everyone's allowed to root for the underdog, yada, yada, yada. Fine, that's nice. But, like, when it's something that goes in direct conflict with your team's success, like, people should be pettier. Like, I'm happy for Matthew Stafford as a person. He seems like a really nice guy. He was really good to the city of Detroit, but I haven't turned myself into a Rams fan. I've been sitting in front of my TV and, like, literally shedding tears over the fact that he went to another team and was successful. It's like, this is the comparison I keep making. It's like, you're left by your significant other. Your significant other leaves you and then starts dating a really handsome, successful person, and you're like, God, I'm so happy for you. Look at what my ex-girlfriend did. She's now dating this really successful hedge fund manager. Isn't that awesome? And people are like, are you like, okay?
No, they're like, and then someone would ask you, like, oh, and you're so happy for them because you also have had such a happy and successful thing happen to you. Right. Since you, and you're like, no, actually,
right.
I live alone. And very dirty. I have not gotten over it. Also, like, do you think Matt Stafford is going to look into the camera after, you know, winning the Super Bowl and being like, I did it for, you know, still thinking about you guys in Detroit, did it for you guys? Hell no. Do you think he cares?
Like, I think the best day of his professional career was the day that he got traded to the LA Rams. Like, and I'm sure I don't know that he would ever admit to that, but, like, it's definitely true. And your point is such a good one. Like, I'm bitter because he didn't have success with my team. Like, he made the playoffs three times. That's nice. Patrick Mahomes has made the NFC Championship game four times in a row. Like, miss me with how good Stafford was. I feel differently about, like, you think of other Detroit sports, and we'll talk Michigan State here, I promise, but, like with Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, like, I feel a little bit differently about them because at least they won to a degree with the Tigers. Like, they made the World Series a couple times, at least Verlander did. And, you know, they gave it they just, like, actually won some stuff and the team was consistently good. The Lions sucked. Like, they had a couple of decent years. They won 10 games 1 year and people are talking like we should have built a statue for Matthew Stafford. You know why people get statues built for them when they're not really that good? Because they win the Super Bowl on an amazing trick play. Just ask Nick Foles. You know, if Matthew Stafford had done that, I would have been out there with the stone and the little tiny hammer. Anyway, Michigan State stuff. No more annoying Detroit sports pouting. How about that?
We'll pout about this instead.
Yeah. The NFL. We'll stick with the NFL. We're starting with football because the transition worked better. Two players from Michigan State off to the NFL are off to great starts in their professional journey. Connor Hayward and Speedy Naylor both invited to the NFL Combine. The highlight here for me will personally be seeing Connor Hayward get measured. I think his measurements are going to be legitimately hysterical.
Absolutely. There's going to be no player comp for him. They're going to be like, I don't know, man. I think during one of the Twitter spaces, I compared him to Bowser.
Yes.
And that's all I got.
The perfect comparison. He is Bowser from Super. He's very heavy. Takes a while to get to top speed, but you probably don't want to be in his way.
You bounce off of him a lot.
Great hands.
Sure. And then Jalen Naylor can have do all the other activities at the combine if he wants. Like, that's cool. Sure. But the 40 times all anyone cares about and the shuttle. So you might, if he's not a sub 4.4, we got to talk about a new nickname though.
Yeah. He's just Jalen.
Yep.
If he might just be JJ, just Jalen. If he can't, run. Yeah. Like you said, and at minimum the 4.4s, yeah, I think he needs to, I think both of these guys, honestly, you know, it's really interesting. We were talking about it a little bit before we started, like Jalen Naylor, I think clearly needs to test well to get drafted. Like the fact that he got invited, I think is awesome. I think it shows that Michigan State as a program is being taken on a little bit more serious note, maybe with regard to turning guys pro than they had been under the previous administration. But he needs to test well if he's going to get drafted just because of the depth of the position. I think Hayward does as well, but I also think that Hayward, there's probably like five or six teams that will even consider taking Connor Hayward, and they won't even consider it until the end of the draft. And those are like the really smart, polished offensive coordinator teams. Like I think about a team like Baltimore. I think about a team like San Francisco, like these teams that really affect New England. That really effectively utilize their H-backs and tight ends and throwing to their running backs. And he could be like this weird Swiss Army knife guy that we've always – he finally started to be this season at Michigan State. I got to think that so long as he doesn't test out of the NFL essentially, some smart team could find a way to use him. I look at Kyle Juszczyk in San Francisco, and I don't see a reason why Hayward couldn't be used in a similar role. Now, it's admittedly a pretty big long shot, but I think the fact he's going to the combine is pretty crazy.
It is. And, you know, you said you got to have an offensive coordinator or a staff that's very comfortable with the rest of the roster to be starting to think about Swiss Army knife-like positions. So it's probably going to be a better team that takes a shot at him, in my opinion.
Yeah, and he should – listen, I hope he just gets to play one way or the other because it's another sport in the NFL and he's the big boy bandwagon must carry on. However, I hope for his sake that it is with a good franchise because if he ends up in like camp with the Jags, like, I'm sorry. I'm just not sure. I'm also a little nervous that if he's out, like once he's out of the NFL or not on a roster or something like that, that it's going to be tough for him to break back in.
I also like the idea of him going to his first camp, NFL camp, doesn't matter what team, and he's just standing at the gate. He's all got all this stuff on, and they're like, okay, go to your position group. And he's like, I don't know where to go. Where do I go?
And he stays in just one spot. He stays where he's standing.
He's just stuck. He's like, running back, no. Tight end, no. Do you guys have an H-back? They made up a thing for me at MSU.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Do you guys have a big boy offensive weapon position group?
Is that around here?
No, that's not here.
There were a couple of us at MSU.
Yeah. Where do the walk-on tight ends go?
But not the ones that were punters.
Yeah. Do you have any converted punters laying around that I could go hang out with? Yeah, it's going to be a weird thing for Connor, but I'm so excited for him to get invited to the combine, and I might actually have to tune in just to watch him run the 40.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and you know, speaking of adding to the big boy bandwagon club, a couple of additions in the portal. Before we hit that segue, I do want to segue the segue, and I saw Lane Kiffin is laying claim to being the portal king, and I can't have it.
Listen, once you get the nation's leading rusher in the portal, you can start talking your talk. He's having a great offseason with that. I mean, like, Jackson Dart is awesome. Michael Trigg is awesome. They got Zach Evans, the kid from TCU. I mean, it's legitimately really impressive what he's doing, but like, there can only be one king. And until you get the nation's leading rusher in the portal, there's no better story. And until there's no better story, it's our man Mel. And listen, Mel's trying to do it again.
Yep. He's got a couple guys. We got a couple guys that actually might be starting, do you think? I think so. Two positions.
The over-under on starters from these two is 1.5. It's going to be one, maybe the other. It's really interesting. So let's talk about both of them. The first is Colorado running back Jarek Broussard. The second is Illinois tight end Daniel Barker. We'll start with Broussard. And first of all, I don't know if there's a fan base that, like, aside from an actual rival or someone in your conference, I don't know if there's a fan base that hates another seemingly random program with the fire that Colorado hates Michigan State with. And to be totally honest with you, I don't blame them at all. We came in under the cover of darkness, sold our head coach, had one off year and then immediately won 11 games, dominated the portal. Oh, and guess what? Now we're going to come take your best offensive player. The Broussard was the 2020, the shortened season, was the Pac-12 offensive player of the year. So that's kind of what you're getting from a high-end talent perspective. Shorter running back. He's like 5'9", maybe around 200 pounds, but was one of the nation's leaders in missed tackles. He's a really, he's kind of got not a super, it's not the same as Kenneth Walker, but he has kind of that really natural sort of glide and ability to make guys miss going side to side with his short little like chop steps that Walker was so famous for. Broussard does have a lot of that in his game. And I guess the second he became available, you know, this is a guy that Mel Tucker's team didn't recruit, but knew of and was on the roster when they were there. So very familiar with him. I would fully expect he and Jalen Berger, the other transfer portal addition from Wisconsin, to probably compete for the starting job. I mean, I'm sure Elijah Collins, and I would assume Jordan Simmons would probably have something to say about that. But if you're kind of reading the tea leaves here, I don't think the staff goes out and gets two border, you know, what it were at the beginning of last year, starters for Power Five teams. Mm-hmm. If they are happy with that room. So Broussard, you lose Kenneth Walker, but you, like I said, you just brought in two dudes that started and played pretty darn well at two Power Five programs. It's tough to be too down on the room after that.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, a little more about Broussard. He averaged 5.2 yards in attempts. He had 60% of his yards gained after contact, 6.5 broken or missed tackles forced per 25 carries, hit at or behind the line of scrimmage on almost half of his carries, second most in the Pac-12. So that sucks for him. But on the rare occasion he wasn't, he averaged 8.8 yards per attempt when not contacted at or behind the line of scrimmage. So he's just literally, you know, he doesn't quite have quite as much shake as Kenneth Walker, but I don't think anyone does. I mean, I'm trying to remember a running back that had as much shimmy as him, and I can't. Yeah, this is a guy that's going to make someone miss on about, you know, once every four carries. But if he gets a clear line, he has enough to make it move, as you can see from almost the 9 yards of attempt when not touched, as he hits the line of scrimmage. So lots of like there, a completely different type of back, I think, than you're going to get from Wisconsin portal edition.
Yep.
And that's okay. That's good. You know, you want a different type of back. And then you have, you know, Eli Collins and Jordan Simmons, as you kind of alluded to, if they choose to stick around. And, I think there's some question marks on what Eli Collins' ability to be what he showed he was in 2019 season, which was a long time ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you did it once, you know, maybe it's still there. Who knows? So like you said, the running back room is at a talent level that you need it to be at to be competing, at the highest, with the highest level teams. You did it for this position. And you got to feel pretty good about the quarterback and wide receivers positions too. So that only leaves the tight ends, right? And
yep.
Mel Tucker took care of that one too.
Yeah, Daniel Barker, who you may remember as the guy who scored the last touchdown as Illinois came back to beat Michigan State. I think they were down like 25-3 or something, whatever, 28-3, that big comeback in Spartan Stadium. I think that was D'Antonio's last year. Yeah, awesome memories. So he scored that winning touchdown. So he's decided to return to the scene of the crime, but play for the other team this time. Some probably smart move on his part. He is the all-time leader in, I believe, receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns for tight ends at the University of Illinois. He actually had previously declared for the NFL draft before deciding to actually take his name out and enter it into the transfer portal so he could play for one more year somewhere. I think the really impressive part about what he did is not only did he achieve all those numbers, but he did it splitting time with Luke Ford quite a bit, who's Illinois' really solid other starting tight end. So he's going to bring an element of – listen, Illinois, especially since Bielema's gotten there, loves to block. Barker is every bit of the big, like, kind of – he actually looks like a tight end, which I don't think Michigan State's really had in quite some time. You know, Gillison is the closest thing, and he couldn't block me. And, you know, again, Malik Carr, I think you've got an amazing potential offensive receiving talent. Barker is just a more complete package. So I'm not sure that Carr isn't the starter next year, but I think he will be because his upside is just enormous. We've seen it in flashes. But Barker is going to play a lot. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're almost kind of co-starters for a year. And I think what that does for MSU is, listen, we talked about it many times every week now, the bye year. That buys a redshirt for Jack Nickel and Michael Masunas, which is awesome. It gives us another year to wait to see if there are guys that can you know, get ready physically to chip in a major way their sophomore years. It buys Michigan State a place on the depth chart. Listen, I love everything Tyler Hunt has done for the program. It's great that, you know, he kind of embodies what makes college football so fun. But I like him a lot more as a third string tight end than as a starter or a backup. So this allows him to kind of get to that position on the depth chart where he probably should be. And honestly, it makes him a pretty damn good third string tight end. But yeah, just it's a really nice way to round out the offensive skill positions, because right now, man, that's a pretty darn good looking group at tight end, like you said, wide receiver and running back, and obviously with Thorne returning as quarterback, you got to feel pretty good. Horst and Carrick both coming back on the offensive line makes you feel pretty good. Now, looking at that unit, that, you know, everybody was kind of like, Kenneth Walker's gone. Are we gonna, you know, where's this whole thing gonna go? Listen, the coaching staff has taken it very seriously to replace that level of talent at multiple levels. And I don't think they're done, but they've done a really good job of shoring things up.
Yeah, two more spots available if they choose to fill them. And, you know, we talked about every other position group except for the offensive line. And you would probably think that that is an area they're going to focus on. And if they can find a rotational player, at least, you know, with Power 5 experience, that's where you're going to start looking. And there are still guys available. You know, asking someone to come in and start with this unit, I don't know if that's a bridge too far. But, you know, someone that can come in and, as we talked about, you know, can you allow Kevin Wigginton, you know, and Dallas Fincher, you know, wait until they're ready to sit there, get their snaps? That's what you're looking for here. And, you know, maybe that's what you look for. And then, you know, as we talked about, you can never have too many pass rushers. And, you know, not to say that they're going to go look for that, but at a certain point, you say, okay, if it's not a position need, you just say, are there any playmakers we can go get?
Yeah.
So the only two spots left, we're running out of room, but,
they could always play kind of this numbers game, backdating some of the positions maybe to the prior class, which could open up some more room. I'll be interested to see how they fiddle around with the numbers if they need to, because I think you're totally right. I would fully expect them to use the last two spots. I 100% would expect those to get used. But like you said, whether they're on immediate impact guys or just maybe down the line playmakers, they've still got two. I would expect if they're looking for impact players, like you said, it's either certainly somebody on the offensive line that they can find it. And you got to remember, this team played like 10 offensive linemen all year last year. So even if it's somebody, like you said, who just plays 40% of the snaps, I still think that's something that they would strongly consider. So there's that. I think the pass rushers, you can simply never have too many of them. So I wouldn't be surprised if another really enticing one became available, they would look that route. I also think you shouldn't sleep on the secondary. And we've talked a lot about it, but you know, the backup safeties right now are both true freshmen, or Kendall Brooks and Tate Halleck, two guys that haven't played a lot, certainly not at high major levels. So I would not be surprised at all to see somebody get brought in there, or you ride with the freshman, you know, who knows? I wouldn't be shocked. Yeah, actually, it would surprise me if they went and got a corner, because there's just so much depth there from this previous recruiting class. But I will say that the safety position, some type of pass rusher and offensive line, those three would make a lot of sense if they do plan to use those. And like you said, I look around this roster right now, this tight end room has seven guys in it. Four of whom are seniors. I don't know. Maybe one or two of those guys sees a greener pasture somewhere else. The running back room has seven guys in it. And now if you're, you know, don't want to speculate on any particular names, but if you're an underclassman looking up and seeing Broussard, Berger, you know, that there's a lot of competition there now. Secondary sort of the same. So I think that there's some areas that, you know, guys are still entering the portal every day. So I would not be surprised to see another name or two go to try and find, you know, maybe more certain playing time somewhere.
Lots of still play out, but we are starting to see the team, you know, and as the team rounds into form, that spring game is actually not too far away, Austin. You know, it's February now.
Yeah.
Spring game is only, you know, 2 months away. And for the most part, that's your squad. And we can start to dissect a little bit more about what's realistic, what expectations should be in this year and what maybe is being built to come. So lots of like huge ads. I feel like we kind of understated it. Like these two ads are massive. These would be the biggest ads for most teams in the country as far as portal transfer ads. It's almost lost a little bit because MSU has done such a good job. You know, it's even hard I'm going to challenge us this summer to rank our portal ads this off season before the season and then at the end. But between Broussard, Barker, and then you got Bogle, Brule, Speed, Windman, Berger, that's a lot of guys that will probably make an impact on this team immediately. Day one. So I don't know if they all can't be starters, but most of them will be. And so
there's a chance that a very, very, very real chance that six of those seven will be starters. Like no question. I mean, both, I love how a lot of them are B names too. Like Broussard, Berger, Bogle, and Brule are all guys that we've recruited. And Barker. I missed another one. It's five. And then the other ones are Speed and Windman, which are just cool names. So not only did they add great players, they added great swag. But, I mean, defensively, I would anticipate all four of the defensive ones starting. And then offensively, both the halfbacks can't start, but one of them in all likelihood will. And then it really depends on, you know, if it's Barker manages to beat out Malik Carr. I think Barker's, if I had to pick one that's probably going to be a backup, it would probably be Daniel Barker. But again, I think he's at least a 40 to 50% of the snaps type of guy. He'll play a lot. And I think to your point, we might be underselling it. I mean, you saw what Michigan State asked of their tight ends last year. There's a lot of blocking, and that blocking opens up lanes for great running backs, of which Michigan State has acquired two this offseason. One of whom is Jarek Broussard. He was the conference player of the year 2 years ago. Like, and then he still ran for almost 700 yards this year despite splitting a few more carries. And it was the only reason he did that was because he got banged up. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Michigan's actually, it's very possible that MSU just got another 1,000-yard rusher out of the portal. And guess what? If it's not him and Jalen Berger beats him out, it's the same story. So, yeah, it's hard not to love what this staff has done, with some of these impact players. I mean, listen, you said, what are our issues going to be going into the offseason? Well, we need running backs to replace Kenneth Walker. Check. We could probably upgrade at the tight end position. Check. We need more pass rushers. Check, check, check. We should really use another cornerback to help with the depth. Check. I mean, there's others still to fill in, but like those are legitimately the questions that were out there for the most part, aside from the offensive line, like we said, that they're going to concentrate on. But they've done a great job of addressing issues the same way they did last year. So, I mean, hats off to the staff, and I'm sure this won't be the last time that they do this.
Yeah, and the last thing is, you know, obviously these are green-colored glasses, but there is a little bit of proof in the pudding. Like, Kenneth Walker's numbers at Wake Forest were – mid. And, you know, you might look at Broussard's numbers last year and they were mid. Well, Colorado's offense was one of the worst in the country. Like,
yeah.
Period. I mean, that's not up for debate. You know, Barker set records as a tight end for Illinois. But Illinois, you know, he had two head coaches. One of them was Lovie Smith. Okay. So, like, let's think about how much he was producing despite the fact that Illinois wasn't exactly leveraging their talent. And they didn't have any talent, by the way. You know, so what does a guy like this do when he has a quarterback that is able to throw two consecutive completions? I mean, like, who knows what the ceiling is? I don't know. But I do know the teams that they were on were the bad. So, and same with Windman, right? Like, his stats were ridiculous, but he was like he's like if you play NCAA football and you are an FCS team and you made a creative player at middle linebacker and he's like a 90 overall. Yeah, he's going to get every, because he's the only competent person out there. So like, he's going to have all the tackles. He's going to have all the, like, everything. You know, what happens to him not when when everything isn't on his shoulders? Does he become a better linebacker? You know, as maybe. There's a lot of good things. I don't feel like we can evaluate them properly, though, until, unfortunately, they start playing games. But I do think the ceiling is higher than maybe some of the statistics they have prove out.
Yeah, the sum will be greater than the parts added together. One thing I just noticed, by the way, is if you look at the linebacker position, you can tell where this staff really emphasized some things. Five of the top six linebackers on this team, if you include kind of the Jack slash defensive end in there with Aaron Brule and Itavian Tank Brown, five of the top six are transfers. And the only one that's not is Cal Halliday. Pretty crazy. Well, talk about talent.
Well, and they know what they need for the defense to succeed, which begs a lot of questions. You know, if they're comfortable with the 4-2-5, and you've alluded to this as well. And I've heard some Big Ten-centric publications kind of struggling with the numbers of seeing, like, how does MSU have such a, you know, their sack rate is this, and then their, you know, pass yardage is that, and, you know, given up. And it's like, okay, here's the denominator. A lot of the problems in a secondary are solved if you get after the quarterback, just period, mm-hmm. Right? Football's an easy sport. You know, get to the quarterback. You're not going to give up as many passing yards. You know what? You know, we can solve this problem one of two ways. Go try and find a bunch of lockdown corners to transfer here. Hard. or we can go find a bunch of playmakers to get after it and just try and stabilize the back half of the defense. Seems more attainable. Let's do that, right? And so they did. And here we are. Will it pay off? I don't know. I will tell you that this defense got a lot more athletic. A lot more. So excited to see what this is expected of the linebacker position now. Like you said, I think it will look a little different.
I'd have to agree. All right, let's take a quick commercial break, and then we will bask in the glow of some basketball. One game in particular. 3-2-1. Then we are back. John, I only acknowledge one of the two basketball games that took place last week. Is that just me?
I'll take the bad one. You can have the good one.
Okay.
I struggled through this one. MSU drops one that felt like a must win at Illinois in Champaign, 55-56. And the reason it felt like that was because their two best players were not available to play. And oof, it felt really tough to watch this team kind of discombobulated, specifically in the first half. And it was hard to watch for stretches. If you want any good takeaways, you know, you can say, well, I guess they fought back. Sure. This was a better team than Illinois without Kofi Coburn and Andre Curbelo. Like, that's not something that even a hardcore Illinois fan would probably fight you on. I think it was hard to see a team maybe felt a little too good about themselves coming off of a win at Wisconsin. You know, I don't know what the problem was, but, you know, Max Christie had one of his worst halves ever. And then I will say he came around in the second half. That was solid for him. What was the huge problem is Julius Marble and Matty Sissoko just simply couldn't defend the pick and roll. Just couldn't do it. They kept going back to it. Trent Frazier was given the keys, and he got him to the finish line. You know, they sputtered all the way to that finish line, but he got him there. And that was ultimately the difference between Trent Frazier, kind of just, like I said, carrying them, and it wasn't a clean carry. Like it struggled. It was not beautiful, but it was just enough. But then MSU, helped them out by shooting 3-for-14 from three, their worst shooting performance of the year. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing else to say beyond it. It was the only thing that made me, I don't even know the word. I've never even heard of a team that has had two attempts to tie a game with no time left. The fact that they were both not converted, I guess isn't the surprising thing, but what we did learn is who we don't want on the free throw line should we get a third attempt at that. And it's not Marcus Bingham. It's not Malik Hall. And so we're working backwards. Process of elimination here. But I mean, what do you say?
It's one of the, you nailed it. The summary is great. This is just one of those games that it feels like MSU has a couple times every year. I'm almost glad that they lost, to be honest, because they didn't deserve to win this game.
It's true.
At all. So you almost are in some ways, you're not okay with it. You're not happy that they lost, but I'm almost glad they weren't rewarded for bad, but for mid behavior. You know what I mean? Like it would have been, it's looking back. It's not a good loss. I mean, losing on the road in the Big Ten is usually something you can really write over really easily, especially on the road against the top 25 team, but they didn't have their two best players and they didn't even play well. I mean, they scored 56 points. Like none of the Trent Frazier went 2 of 10 from deep. Like they didn't even play a good game, and yet Michigan State just couldn't answer the bell. And like you said, we want guards on the stripe to tie the game, preferably if we get into another one of those situations. I mean, wasn't even a bad turnover game. I mean, she only had 11 turnovers. They just couldn't shoot 3 of 14 from three. shot less than 35% from the field. I think, you know, this is, I think you kind of got the worst version of Tyson Walker in this one too. I mean, he usually doesn't take a ton of shots. In this one, he ended up taking 10, only made three of them. Missed his only 3-point attempt, turned the ball over three times. I mean, tough game. You nailed it with Max Christie. I think probably his worst game as a Spartan, which given what happened the next game is makes the next game even more impressive. But yeah, just wasn't much. Bingham is, what this did when anything is cements to me that he is the most important part of this team in general, because you can get really good minutes out of Julius Marble, but he is limited. Manny Sissoko looks lost the majority of the time he's on the floor. So, yeah, you also, well, so listen, to put a bullet on this one or bow on this one, not a great loss, frustrating night. And I'm glad that they lost the game. I'm glad they didn't win, because if you pull a game out like this that you win, you can walk away from it with a good taste in your mouth. And I'm glad they didn't
get away. Yeah, you think you can get away with bullshit.
Right.
This first half was a bullshit performance, and they know it.
Yeah.
The second half was good. Second half was strong. They outscored Illinois 35-22. You know, and I think the thing that to keep an eye on, you mentioned Bingham is such a key, and I think you're right. The other piece is watch Tyson Walker when he's trying to – when he's just playing basketball and when he's playing not to lose.
Yep.
There's a complete difference. And you can watch Tyson Walker if you want to rewatch the last 2 minutes of that game. Tyson Walker is afraid to make passes that were there because he didn't want to turn the ball over. He was so afraid of messing up that he got in his own way and then didn't run the set that was for an elevator screen Joey Hauser shot. He took the ball to the basket on his own and had a contested mid-range jumper. Tom Izzo didn't appreciate that idea either. And that's just someone who was afraid to make the pass. And you know, to his credit, he was big enough to try and take the shot to win instead of just, you know, blowing the play up altogether. But what he didn't do in this game, you saw A.J. Hogard do the opposite of in the Michigan game. And
yeah.
And AJ had the best game of his career in East Lansing.
I mean, between AJ and Max Christie, you had two guys who went from arguably their worst games to almost definitely their best. I don't know who's even the story of this one. I mean, there were several guys that I thought you could make a case for as best player of the game. But the numbers kind of bear it out. This team just made more shots, and they were just so balanced and efficient basically the entire game, but especially down in the second half. But first we'll start with Hogard. I mean, Tyson Walker was probably the only player that I'd look at and, you know, and say he didn't have that great of a game, didn't make a huge impact. 3 turnovers, 7 points. When he went off and Hogard came on, the offense just really kind of came to life. I mean, Hogard had a double-double, 11 points, 10 assists, only one turnover. I mean, if you're going to get those numbers out of your starting point guard, you're happy, let alone out of your backup. So awesome to see him come through and have such a big game. And also mentioned him already, Max Christie. I mean, Max Christie kept this game from, I would never say getting out of hand in the first half, but Michigan hung in this game for a large portion of the first half. I think it always seemed like MSU was the better team, but Michigan was right there for a lot of it. And Christie made a couple of threes that either tied the game or gave MSU the lead back kind of in the waning stage of the first half, that I think allowed them to really pull away down the stretch, because they weren't down seven. They were up one, you know, and the game could have easily gone that way. So, huge game from him. Joey Hauser had 14, which is kind of like the nail in the coffin when he's doing that against you. He made 2 threes. Blake Hall had 15 and made 2 threes. I think you saw Bingham play tremendous defense the entire night. He had 4 blocks. And then if you look at the other side for Michigan, I honestly thought the only guy that stood out to me, and I have to give credit where it's due, was Musa Diabate. Uh-huh. Diabate, he's good, man. I liked him a lot. Like, he's a 5-star recruit, all hustle, did a really have 6 offensive rebounds in this game, 3 blocks, was really the only one that looked, quite frankly, the only one who looked like he really wanted to be out there. The rest of their team just kind of fell apart. And John, this feels like a typical Michigan-Michigan State matchup, right? Where Michigan's kind of the floundering squad, Michigan State, you know, verges of the top 10. Michigan usually has a little bit better performance, a little bit better team than this one, but that's not what this was supposed to be this year. This was supposed to be the other way around. And I think preseason polls are stupid for every sport, but sometimes they are so spectacularly stupid that it takes – everyone needs to, like, really take a moment and ask all these media members what the hell they were thinking. How they thought this Michigan team was supposed to be a top 4 team is completely and totally beyond me. And I'm not saying that everyone should have seen this coming, this 10-8, 4-4 in the conference, getting their doors blown off by every decent team they play performance. But it kind of blows my mind that they were – a top 4 team?
3.
Going into the season? 3. Yeah. They're getting picked for national championships? I don't know, man.
You know, it's a shame. Hate to see it.
Yeah.
But, when you know, listen. Michigan State beat a quad 2 team handily. And that's good and fine. But Michigan, I think this is the hard thing as a fan, to enjoy beating the hell out of your rival and also being able to set it aside and say, this game doesn't really mean a ton in the scheme of the season because that team was not good. And if this team, if Michigan State wants to be serious about being good or competing for a banner, they need to get a lot better. And they did what they needed to do against Michigan to do that, right? They beat a mid team by a lot, you know, and they need to find areas to improve on in this game and continue to get better. Cause there are 5 teams in the Big Ten that actually are decent. Michigan is definitely not one of them. And that's not to take away from beating the hell out of your rival at home. The crowd was fantastic. Michigan never had a chance. They never had a chance in this game for 1,000 different reasons. But you can be proud of that and happy about that. And I'm not going to like move on altogether because I want to keep talking about this game a bit. But if Michigan State wants to be serious, and you've heard us say this earlier in January, they need to win these next 2 road games. Otherwise, we're just playing basketball and it's all fun and fine, and we don't win any championships. There are no banners. There's no mid-March run. Like, I know it's hard. It's maybe hyperbolic to say, but if you don't beat 2 other quad 2 mid teams on the road this year, I don't see a real path for Michigan State to not only win the Big Ten championship, but really become great. Like, these are games that you have to win. They did that here. They didn't against Illinois. So, you know, good on them for a step forward after a step back. But Michigan State is a program that we expect to beat Michigan by a lot at home because that's what happens in this rivalry lately and actually for a very long time. And it also expects to compete for championships. It's in the hunt to do that. And this week's going to be huge to see if that's still a reality or not. But before we go on to the next couple games, I want to hit on a couple parts of this game because I thought it was real, just interesting points. 15 players played for Michigan State in this game. 15. That has to be near record. And one of those players was a football player who you may have heard of, Keon Coleman, who I thought it was a pro move by Tom Izzo to put Malik Carr and Keon Coleman in with his son. Little protection, you know, a little muscle. And Keon Coleman, Juwan did not take out his starters. And Keon Coleman went 1-on-5, got his own bucket. My fear, hand up, is that Keon Coleman thinks he needs a little more PT and starts to voice that concern a little more vocally with the team. And maybe he does. I'm not saying he shouldn't. But, like, as we reschedule games, which Michigan State just did with Michigan, and they're going to be a compressed schedule, I think you'll start to see the depth of this team become even more important, and it'll be a differentiator against teams like Michigan, who had Eli Brooks play for 38 minutes, and they're going to run out of gas, you know, in those 4 games in 9 days windows, which are going to happen at the end of this month or the beginning of March. So there's a lot to be gained by having such a deep rotation. And, you know, there are areas that need to get better. The backup center position really needs to figure it out. Pierre Brooks probably needs more minutes if we want any type of contribution from him. But A.J. Hogarth took a huge step forward. We love to see that. Malik Hall had one of his best games, period. He was the heart and soul of this entire team for this game. He was on the floor. He was getting people up. He was everything you wanted a Michigan State basketball player to be. And Max Christie had one of the best bounce back games we've seen in a long time. And the moment was not too big for him. And as you mentioned, Diabate is an NBA player. He is a first round draft pick. And Max Christie had zero problem going up to him and letting him know that he's down by 15.
Yeah, I love that. And that's just incredible, incredible smack talk too.
That was a side of Max that we have not seen. It's not necessarily a thing that makes you a better basketball player, but it showed how much confidence he has gained. And if you have a confident backcourt, we saw Tyson Walker not be confident, but you saw A.J. Hogarth be incredibly confident. The more confident your guards are, man, that's the new height. Like, that's the new ceiling. And we'll see if it carries over.
Yeah, I mean, Max Christie is really becoming sort of the weather vane. I don't know what the term is, but like as he goes, so goes Michigan State, especially over the course of the last 5 games. I mean, if you look at, you know, against Northwestern, he goes 1 of 8 from the field, 0 of 5 from deep, scores 6 points, they lose. Go on the road to Wisconsin, he goes 5 of 7 from the field, makes both his threes, 12 points, they win. Go on the road to Illinois, 1 of 8, 0 of 3, 2 points, they lose. Home against Michigan, 5 of 8, 3 of 4, 16 points, and they win. So I think what you're seeing is something we talked about a lot coming into the year, and especially in the early part as well, is that this kid is absolutely integral to the success of the team. And your backcourt has always been at Michigan State kind of the deciding factor. The guys with the ball, and it's a college basketball, the guys with the ball in their hand the most need to be your best players, period, end of story. And Max Christie is one of those two guys, with Tyson Walker and the third probably being A.J. Hogarth. And when you get two of those three playing really well, you can do this to mid teams and you can beat really good teams. So Christie deserves a ton of credit. I love seeing him hit his stride as we're coming down the stretch here. I also think that, and it has nothing to really do with this game because he didn't make much of an impact in his 12 minutes. But Jaden Akins, I think, is another guy that you're going to see continue to get a lot of tick as we move forward here and get into these, as you said, those 4 games in, you know, 2 week windows or whatever it might be. It's going to be very interesting to see how this rotation is able to shake out. And like you said, I think you coming down the stretch, you're playing good teams on nights that are really close together with a title on the line. I mean, that depth is going to be incredible. And I totally agree with you as we spin forward here. You know, I feel like this season is following just the most Michigan State script ever. Like it could not be a more Michigan State season thus far. Like, if I just look at the schedule, like, you play in the, you know, you've got all these brand new pieces. You play a top five team that's proven to be a top five team all year, top 10 team in Kansas. You lose the first game of the season. You go on to beat some interesting guys, you know, kind of fight back in these tournaments, make it all the way to the final, beating UConn and Loyola on the way. And then you drop one to a really good team in Baylor. Then you fight back and you kind of make your way through the January stretch there, doing really well. Then you run into some trouble in late January, early February. I mean, as of now, we are playing an extremely Michigan State season. I think the very interesting part, typically what happens, you have 11 games left now, which, by the way, just take a half step back and think about that. You have 11 games left in the regular season. It's not a ton. Not a ton. And you know, this is the part where Michigan State can go one of two ways. And this isn't like genius insight, but like we've seen MSU teams at this point, I'd say the majority of the time, this is where they start to turn it on. And maybe that's what we saw start to happen there with that Michigan win. We've also seen them lose tough games in this like early February, mid-February stretch. But that, quite frankly, in this year's Big Ten, if they want to win a championship, it can't happen. And these two games this week, to your point, against at Maryland, at Rutgers, you know, two teams that are, what, let's see here, a combined 9-11 in the conference, a combined 23-20 overall. Those are simply games that you cannot drop. And I think the really interesting thing with, especially with Maryland, tonight, when you're listening to this on Tuesday, will be the mental side of this. Cause they're a better team than Maryland. Maryland's beaten some good teams. They beat Illinois, at home. They've been through a lot this year, but you know, they've also gotten boat raced by Michigan. Like Maryland's a super up and down team that Michigan State is clearly more talented than. However, we've seen it now, in these last five games, MSU's only 3-2. They've done a great job of bouncing back and beating, you know, fighting hard to beat Minnesota, let down against Northwestern, fighting super hard and blowing Wisconsin out, losing a bad game at Illinois, you know, fighting super hard and beating Michigan. Are we done with this up and down, or are we going to keep doing this rotating, you know, kind of dance here? I think because I can read this last stretch in a couple of ways. Part of me says this team is super mentally tough to bounce back and beat Wisconsin like that and beat Michigan like that. But the other part of me says they take their eye off the ball after they feel comfortable and they lose games to Northwestern and Illinois. So I think this next stretch, these two games, this week and then the home game against Wisconsin on the 8th will say quite a bit.
I would call this week, these are your captain's games. These are the guys that you've already, like you said, you've taken your eye off the ball. You have at least two bad losses. They're bad. They should not have happened. But it's college basketball. Those happen. You're still in control of yourself. You're still in control of chasing a Big Ten championship. If you want to get loosey-goosey and take your eye off the ball on two away games in this league, you don't deserve to win the Big Ten. And so that's why I'm a captain's games in that Malik Hall and Gabe Brown will need to be the most engaged and get the team as most engaged as possible. And if that happens, I think we can start to have conversations about, you know, chasing that Big Ten championship. But, you know, we're past no letdowns. The letdowns happened. Like, there are no more mulligans. Not when you're chasing the Big Ten championship. Not when there's a team like Purdue and Illinois full strength in this league. So the mulligans are gone. You know, these are must wins. Otherwise, like we talk about, we're just playing basketball. You know, we're just sort of playing, and you know, maybe you'll be a top four in the conference, and maybe you'll be a 4 or 5 seed, and who knows if, you know, maybe you get to a Sweet 16, and maybe that's fine for some people, but I don't think that this team needs to settle for that. I think there's another gear in there, and I think they can find it. And maybe the Michigan was the catalyst. Maybe it was the jumping off point. I don't know. They beat a bad team at home. So what's next? You know, that's the big question.
Yeah. And quite literally, what's next is Maryland. Do you want to talk a little bit about Maryland at all?
I mean, just briefly.
No.
There aren't too many people that are going to have a lot of time to listen to this, but I think the only thing that I would watch out for is that, you know, Maryland is looking at this game. If they're looking at their schedule in general, and this is the start of a absolutely crushing 4 games in a row. They play Michigan State at home, and then Sunday they play at Ohio State, then Iowa at home, then at Purdue. Now, you could argue that this season was kind of a wash as soon as their head coach left in the middle of the year. But if these guys even want to, this is a proud program. Like, Maryland's a proud program. Like they are not, you know, a blue blood, but this is a decent basketball program. If they don't make the NIT, that is a shame. Like,
yeah,
that can't happen to proud programs. And you have to have a winning record to make the NIT. And by the way, the NIT would love to have a program like Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just saying, you know, they need a winning record. They need to win probably five more. They need to win five more games. These next four aren't going to be easy. You know what I mean? So, like, I guess I'm just kidding. If they get Michigan State twice, can they point to a win against a team like Michigan State and say, like, okay, that is our rallying point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in a home game, too. I don't think it's going to be an easy win. I don't. I just don't think – I don't think Maryland's any good, to be very clear. But I also don't think you can just roll into any program in the Big Ten outside of maybe Nebraska and expect to just walk out with a win.
Yeah, I mean, they're like you said, this should be a game that Michigan State should win somewhat comfortably. Their size should be a huge benefit. I mean, Bingham should, you know, Kadus Wahab is their big man, but Bingham should do a really good, you know, should be a major impact on him. And Michigan State, frankly, is just a better team. I mean, Maryland's, you know, they've got, you know, just in looking at their schedule, like they beat Florida, they beat the crap out of Illinois, they beat Rutgers by 8. But then if you look at their losses, they're just bad. Like lost by 5 against Iowa, 6 against Northwestern, 19 against Michigan, 11 against Rutgers the first time they played. And their last loss was by 13 against Indiana, at home. So, you know, it's just, they're not a great team. Like you said, if Michigan State wants to be taken seriously, they win this game. It's actually kind of crazy because I almost do think that they're better than Rutgers though. Just in looking at Rutgers in general, like Rutgers is absolutely just an absolute chaos team. Like if you go all the way back to the beginning of their season, their first game, they beat Lehigh by 3 in overtime. And then they scored 48 against Merrimack. Like, what a chaotic start to the season. Then they go ahead and lose 3 straight to DePaul, Lafayette, and UMass, all by less than 3 points. They somehow beat Clemson, get boat raced by Illinois. Like, they lost by 17 to Penn State in this Big Ten season. They also beat Michigan by 8, beat Iowa by 2, and beat Purdue when Purdue was ranked number 1 for the first time ever at home. Like, but then you get into like their last 4 games, 2-point win against Iowa, 3-point loss on the road at Minnesota, 8-point loss at home to Maryland, 2-point win on the road at Nebraska. Like this is a team that is scuffling down the stretch. So, you know, listen, it's the craziest part is that it's all the same players. I guess that's not crazy because they haven't been good, but like, Ron Harper Jr. is still by far the best player. Geo Baker somehow there. Cliff Omorowicz, not bad. After that, it completely falls off a ledge. So, I don't know how much time it's even worth spending talking about them because basically, if you can't slow down, you have to slow down Harper and hope Baker doesn't go, you know, banana land on you and you should win this game. And this is just, again, just to put a bow on this before we get into some quick takeaways. These are 2 games Michigan State needs to win. Frank, end of story. If they lose either one of these games, to be completely honest, it changes my entire expectation for the season in general. Because it's just, I mean, if they lose these games, they're just not a serious. They're not a serious Big Ten threat.
Unserious.
Unserious Big Ten threat. ATM.
We don't want to go down that path. But, you know, like concerned parents, we got to have the talk, you know, a difficult talk before, you know, we're setting expectations here.
Got to be prepared.
And, you know, I think one thing to watch out, I'm just going to start layering this in as I can't help but look ahead to March because, hey, next month there is tournament basketball, okay, not too far off. The Big Ten as a whole is a really interesting conference in that there's only one team in the top 100 in the country that turns you over at any rate that is considered decent. That's Iowa. Only one top 100 team. The rest, it's just, it's a conference that, as you guys know, you kind of pack it in. You're not going to overextend, not a lot of pressing. But Michigan State doesn't usually need a lot of help turning the ball over. And they turn the ball over against teams that aren't really looking to turn you over. And so if Michigan State's going to run into a team in the NCAA tournament who maybe focuses that as the focal point of their defense, it's going to be a huge problem. So the flip side is you saw how easily Michigan State broke a very unserious press that Michigan was putting on. And that was very encouraging to me. But, it's not anything groundbreaking to say they need to reduce the turnovers, but seriously, they have to because they're not playing teams that are not trying to turn you over. Like, they're not even trying. They're just like, we're just throwing the ball out of bounds. It's really weird. So you go to the NCAA tournament, you play Alline Christian. Ha.
Mm-hmm.
Mark it as an L, not beating them. Like, not with the way we handle the ball. So all I can do is look ahead and start to make my list of teams I don't want to play. And Austin, that's one of our favorite things to do. So
yes.
So I'm going to put, we're going to start adding to that list as we go, as we get towards March. And hopefully Michigan State can be on the list. You know, obviously we can't play ourselves, but, as a team that other teams look, you know, when the brackets release and you're like, oh man, I do not want to play them.
That's all you really want to be, right? That's all you want to be. If you're not going to be the, like, favorite, which I'd also rather not be.
Right.
You want to be a team that people don't want to play. Mm-hmm. MSU could be, well, we'll see. This week will tell us a lot as to whether they're trending that direction or not.
Well, Austin, beat Michigan. Get another shot at them in Ann Arbor on March 1st, sounds like. They're going to need that dub. And who knows? Maybe Michigan State will need it because they're chasing a Big Ten championship. Hope so.
Yeah, I hope so as well. That'd be nice. Be nice for everybody.
Listen how cautious we're being.
God, yeah, we're so washed. I don't know. I just don't know what to believe. I feel like I've been burned against Northwestern and Illinois now, and I need more just like calm wins. The last 2 weeks have been too chaotic for my old heart.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right.
I'm good.
That's it, John.
Sounds good.
All right, guys. As always, thanks for sticking with us. For John, this is Austin, and we will catch you guys next week.